About 2 or 3 years ago, I was with a couple of families, and we were visiting a great museum. And another dear friend who is a guide and a docent was leading them around, talking mostly to the children at my request. She began by leading us into the Egyptian section of the museum, which caused me to roll my eyes, wondering what she was going to do with that. The children, however, were attentive, and she asked them what they thought of these statues representing the gods. And the children ran off and looked at everything and then came back and reported to her, "They don't look real." And if you've ever been in an Egyptian museum and looked at the god images, the kids got it right. Then she led us into the Greek and Roman section, and after a few stories to the children about mythology, she sent the children off again to explore. And they came back again, and she asked them what they thought of those gods, and the children said, "They look angry and violent." Then we went up to a gallery of very early Christian art, and she asked the same question. "They don't look like real people," was the report of the children. And finally, we worked our way into the Renaissance section, and to that same question, the children said, "They look real, and they're beautiful." What that guide led them to see is that after the incarnation of Jesus Christ, something changes in terms of how we see God. I think of that afternoon in the museum today when we hear Philip's request when he says, "Show us the Father." Sculptors and artists reveal what humans have done since the truth about us was revealed with the story of Adam and Eve. Being made in the image and likeness of God requires some humble obedience, but we seem to prefer it the other way around, and we're always making God in our image. Those children got it right. In describing the gods they saw, they were really describing the people who were angry, violent, and fortunately, some of them not real. When Philip says, "Show us the Father," he expresses one of the deepest longings in the human heart. We want to see God, the real God, not a God who could pass for one of us, for heaven's sake. We want a God who's perfect in every way. And God's response to that plea was to take on flesh in the person of Jesus Christ. And the consequence of that incarnation was to restore us, God's beloved children, to our original condition as the image of the real and true God. But progress has been slow, and resistance is great. The scribes and Pharisees, they resisted, clinging to their preference for a harsh, judgmental God, enforcing rules and regulations. And even for a time, the apostles resisted with their efforts when they wanted to rain down fire and destruction upon those who did not welcome them. Our resistance is marked by our failure to embrace the model of what we were created to be, perfectly and beautifully human, as revealed in Jesus Christ. The Son of God does not only reveal the Father, Jesus also reveals what it is to be perfectly human as well. The excuse that we make for our failures, "Well, I'm only human," is the first and most obvious sign that we're resisting. Being human is not something lowly, inadequate, or sinful. Being human's not an excuse. Being human is a testimony that we have not believed, understood, or accepted the wonderful mystery of what's revealed in the incarnation. Being human is the highest and most perfect and godlike of all God's creation. When he got done making humans, he didn't go on any further. He got it right. Nothing else was created in God's image. So when Philip cries out, "Show us the Father," Jesus says, "Look at me. The Father and I are one. The Father is in me." Friends, when we want to see the Father, we ought to be able to look at one another. A people made holy and redeemed by the sacrifice of Christ. When someone is seeking God, why should they look any further than into this holy place when we have filled it with our presence? The key teaching in John's entire gospel is here today in these words. Jesus is God's only self-description, God's only command, and God's only dream for humanity. In other words, if we shape our life on Christ, not only will we be fulfilling God's will, we will become the kind of humans God has always dreamed of, reflecting God's love to all we meet. And anyone who meets us, a people born in baptism and fed on this Eucharist, should have seen the Father, and they don't need to look any further. This is what God wills and dreamed of in God's own creation.